This is Free Speech Radio News for Friday, February 1st, 2013. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, in Texas, activists settle a lawsuit brought by TransCanada that restricts some forms of protest, but actions against the controversial project continue. Students in Colorado organize against bullying and push their school district to expand its anti-discrimination policy. And we'll go to the Netherlands, where a court case has brought attention to ethical hackers who are exposing security lapses online. Those stories and more, but first, this news.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for FSRN. A suicide bomber attacked the U.S. Embassy in the Turkish capital Ankara today, killing himself and a security guard at a perimeter checkpoint. The U.S. says recent security upgrades at the embassy contributed to the low number of casualties in the bombing. FSRN's Gayatri Pamishwaran reports from Turkey.
The suicide bomber detonated his
This is Free Speech Radio News for Friday, February 1st, 2013. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, in Texas, activists settle a lawsuit brought by TransCanada that restricts some forms of protest, but actions against the controversial project continue. Students in Colorado organize against bullying and push their school district to expand its anti-discrimination policy. And we'll go to the Netherlands, where a court case has brought attention to ethical hackers who are exposing security lapses online. Those stories and more, but first, this news.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for FSRN. A suicide bomber attacked the U.S. embassy in the Turkish capital Ankara today, killing himself and a security guard at a perimeter checkpoint. The U.S. says recent security upgrades at the embassy contributed to the low number of casualties in the bombing. FSRN's Gayatri Pamishwaran reports from Turkey.
The suicide bomber detonated his explosive device at a security checkpoint at the side entrance to the embassy. Apart from the two dead, several Turkish civilians were left injured in the incident. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack, but the Turkish Interior Minister told media the suicide bomber could have been a member of an illegal leftist group. Some officials suspect the involvement of an anti-West Marxist group, DHKPC, the Revolutionary People's Liberation Party Front. The U.S. State Department said it is working with the Turkish National Police on the case. The U.S. has warned its citizens in Turkey not to visit diplomatic missions until further notice. With additional reporting from Felix Gaitkar, I'm Gayatri Parmeshwaran, FSRN, Istanbul.
Reports of human rights abuses continue to emerge from Mali. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch say there have been civilian casualties from French airstrikes, and both Mali government troops and northern militants have committed extrajudicial executions and other human rights violations. Some captured militants have reported torture at the hands of government troops. An explosion at a Mexico City office of the state oil corporation, Petróleos Mexicanos, has left 32 people dead and injured more than 100. Officials still have not released many details of the Thursday blast, including the cause. Rescue efforts continue today. Staying in Mexico, thousands of campesinos, union members, environmental activists, and students marched to Mexico City late yesterday, protesting the introduction and cultivation of genetically modified or GM corn. More than 50 people participated in a week-long fast, which culminated Thursday in a 4,000-person march. The protesters called on President Enrique Peña Nieto to reject pending permits from Monsanto, DuPont, and Dow to plant giant tracts of genetically modified corn in northern Mexican states.
El pueblo no puede estar comiendo maíz contaminado.
The people cannot eat contaminated corn. That's why the Mexican people protest. We've had enough of the governments that deceive the people every day while saying it will help and things will improve. These are lies. They are just selling out the Mexican people.
If the permits go through, it will be the first time GM corn will be harvested on a wide scale in Mexico. FSRN's Andalusia Knoll and Vladimir Flores contributed to this report. The National Labor Relations Board has suspended a complaint filed by Walmart against the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union and the Walmart employees group R. Walmart. FSRN's Jim Pullen has more.
Walmart's complaint alleged that the UFCW and Our Walmart violated labor laws by running pickets aimed at organizing workers for more than 30 days. The Commercial Workers Union told the labor board that the actions weren't demands for collective bargaining representation. They also agreed not to picket stores for 60 days. However, according to UFCW Communications Director Jill Chasson, the union still intends to support Our Walmart's efforts, and that support may include picketing.
There are Walmart associates on a daily basis taking all kinds of action together, whether it be small group meetings in their homes, online activity, prayer vigils, meetings in churches, outreach to consumers. The activity they take, that they choose to take, takes many, many forms, and the UFCW is right there supporting them with many, many other ally organizations right behind them.
Calls to Walmart have not been returned. Walmart's complaint was filed before a string of Black Friday protests. Labor union members and the public joined employees at dozens of stores nationally to protest low wages, lack of sick leave, and unfair schedules. Our Walmart also alleged that the retail giant was retaliating against employees who were speaking out. Jim Pullen, FSRN.
And finally, an Oregon man arrested in a federal sting operation has been convicted of terrorism for planting an FBI-supplied fake bomb at a 2010 Christmas tree event in Portland. Mohammed Mohamud was a teenager at the time, and the defense's argument that the U.S. government entrapped him did not sway the jury. Similar FBI sting operations have yielded comparable verdicts. The FBI began tracking Mohamud when he was 17, when it was discovered he had been trading emails with an Al-Qaeda leader. And finally, that's the greeting that met Hillary Clinton as she stepped before State Department employees to give her farewell address. Today she departs as the 67th U.S. Secretary of State after 4 years of work in Washington and around the globe. Clinton said she was proud of her work and confident about the direction of U.S. diplomacy. She addressed today's bombing outside the embassy in Ankara, Turkey, and the ongoing challenges and difficult days ahead.
I know that the world we are trying to help bring into being in the 21st century will have many difficult days. But I am more optimistic today than I was when I stood here 4 years ago.
Clinton said she continued to be an advocate for the work of the department from outside. Former Senator John Kerry was sworn in as the next secretary at a ceremony this afternoon. And that's headlines for FSRN. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
I'm Dorian Marina in Los Angeles. The transition to President Obama's second-term administration continues to take shape with the departure of more federal agency heads. Federal Trade Commission Chair John Leibowitz and Energy Secretary Stephen Chu both announced Friday that they will be stepping down. President Obama has already made some key nominations for his economic team in the second term, tapping Mary Jo White to lead the Securities and Exchange Commission and Jack Lew to run the Treasury Department. But some economic experts say both nominees have a history of protecting big banks from regulation or prosecution. And another major Obama nominee to lead the CIA faces allegations of supporting torture and extrajudicial killings. In Washington, FSRN's Alice Olstein has more.
The Senate overwhelmingly confirmed Massachusetts Democrat John Kerry to lead the State Department. But as the mass exodus of agency chairs continues, other nominees for President Obama's cabinet may face a tougher confirmation process. Earlier this week, the president defended his pick for the Securities and Exchange Commission, the agency tasked with regulating the banking industry and stock market.
Mary Jo White has decades of experience cracking down on white-collar criminals and bringing mobsters and terrorists to justice. At the SEC, she will help complete the task of reforming Wall Street and keep going after irresponsible behavior in the financial industry so that taxpayers don't pay the price.
Yet White also worked for a corporate law firm that defended big banks accused of securities fraud, insider trading, and other crimes, including J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, and HSBC. If confirmed, White would have to recuse herself from key decisions at the agency involving the banks she used to represent. Economics professor and former bank regulator William Black says this could tip the balance of power at the SEC in a dangerous way.
The Republicans on the Securities and Exchange Commission, they are extremists in trying to prevent effective actions against the frauds. And so if you lost through recusal one of the three Democratic SEC commissioners, you might prevent the ability to have the SEC even order investigations or even order remedies against many of these worst institutions.
The president recently nominated another financial regulator, choosing former White House Chief of Staff Jack Lew to lead the Treasury Department. Lew has moved several times through the so-called revolving door between government and Wall Street, working at Citicorp and the Office of Management and Budget, among other jobs. Professor Black, who worked with Lew during the Clinton administration, criticized his economic record.
He was a big architect of the so-called reinventing government movement. And the reinventing government movement, which was led by Al Gore, did a number of disastrous things. And I witnessed this personally as a regulator. They instructed us to refer to the industry as our client. We were supposed to stop, and this is the word they used, imposing, quote-unquote, regulations on the industry.
If Lew and White are confirmed by the Senate, they'll be tasked with completing the implementation of the 2010 Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform Law. Professor Gerald Epstein with the Political Economy Research Institute says federal regulators still have a lot to do.
Agencies have only written rules for about one-third of all of the Dodd-Frank rules that have to be clarified and implemented. So they're way behind the game. They haven't completed rules, in fact, connected to any of the main causes of the financial crisis.
Many human rights and civil liberties groups are voicing concerns about another Obama cabinet nominee. Counsel Chris Anders with the American Civil Liberties Union says the public deserves to know how involved CIA nominee John Brennan was in the Bush administration's torture program.
We certainly know because there are records showing that he knew about the program. But the question is, what did he do with that information? Was he someone who was helping to carry out the program? Was he an implementer?
Brennan is scheduled to come before the Senate Intelligence Committee for his confirmation hearing on February 7th. Alice Olstein, FSRN, Washington.
In Texas, a protester with the tar sands blockade was released from police custody today after being arrested Thursday for disrupting a conference where a representative from TransCanada was scheduled to speak on pipeline safety. A video posted by activists shows Ramsey Sprague, a resident from Fort Worth, Texas, after he chained himself to a speaker by the side of the stage.
We may have been slap-suited. TransCanada sued me. And I'm standing here to say I'm not going to be silenced by TransCanada.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd just like to say I apologize for this disruption. We'll be playing some gentle music and be getting some bolt cutters, and we will resume as soon as we can. Unfortunately, we can't move the speaker without shutting down the whole system, but we will be resuming as soon as possible. Thank you so much, and again, we apologize for this.
I really apologize that TransCanada is a terrible actor stealing land from my friends in order to facilitate a toxic tar sands pipeline that is full of holes. Like Swiss cheese in my friend's backyard.
Sprague is one of the activists named in a lawsuit brought by TransCanada that sought to restrict protests on its property and land the company claims for the project. The suit, called a strategic litigation against public participation, or SLAP suit, alleged that protesters cost TransCanada millions of dollars. The protesters settled the suit last week. For more, we're joined by Ramsey Sprague from Houston, Texas. Welcome to FSRN.
Thank you for having me.
You've been released from jail this morning. What were the charges against you, and what were the conditions of your release?
My charges were disrupting a meeting or procession. And the terms of my release are, I was bonded myself out. I have to return to court on February 20th and face my charges, plead guilty or not guilty, and move through the system accordingly.
At the protest yesterday, you specifically mentioned the slap suit that TransCanada brought against you and other individuals and groups. How has this lawsuit affected you, your action, or your response to the project?
Well, the slap suit is just an affront to free speech. TransCanada thinks that by bullying a small group of Texans that they're going to stop the grassroots movement against their toxic project, and that's simply not the case. They're dead wrong in that regard. What we've actually seen is a massive response in support of our work following the slap suit settlement. We were forced into a very, very difficult position as an organization, being people who want to advocate for the lives and livelihoods of Texans. It was very sad for us to know that the other named defendants, who really had nothing to do with the organization itself beyond their participation in acts of civil disobedience, that those individuals would be held responsible for all of the damages TransCanada was claiming over the lifetime of Tar Sands Blockade's activities.
Because Tar Sands Blockade was mentioned specifically in the suit, but there also were individuals who were mentioned by name.
Right. These were individuals who had been arrested in some of our earliest actions. In fact, every individual who was arrested in every single action that Tar Sands Blockade was ever involved in up until about the middle of October.
TransCanada brought this suit last fall. As we mentioned, it was settled last week. The company did not return FSRN's request for a comment or interview today, but a spokesperson was quoted in Bloomberg by saying the deal includes stopping attempts at chaining, shackling, binding, or attaching a person's body or any other object, article, or mechanism to Keystone equipment on Keystone property. Is that accurate, and what exactly does the settlement require?
Well, that is the terms of the settlement. All it requires is that we are not to be on what TransCanada claims as its land, as its easement for the Keystone XL pipeline in Oklahoma and Texas. It doesn't restrict any activities elsewhere. As you saw, I chained myself to a speaker yesterday on Marriott property.
At one point yesterday during that action, as you were being arrested, a woman asks you, why can't you work within the system in order to express your protest? Those are her words. What is your response to that?
Well, my response to her in that moment was simply, you know, I wish that the system was adequate enough to protect my brothers and sisters who are being poisoned in Canada. But they, what some community members there call a slow industrial genocide. Certainly a slow industrial genocide is something that government should be able to protect against. So certainly if the regulatory regimes were stringent enough to protect these people, then probably my work wouldn't be necessary.
I want to ask specifically about the project. According to TransCanada, the initial capacity of the Gulf Coast pipeline will be 700,000 barrels of oil per day, but that the ability will increase to 830,000 barrels a day. The company expects the pipeline to go into commercial service later this year in 2013. What are your concerns about the project, and specifically how tar sands oil is different than other petroleum products?
Well, sure. First and foremost, it's not oil. It is what the industry sometimes calls synthetic oil, but more correctly, it's diluted bitumen. It is bitumen, which is a hydrocarbon, an exotic hydrocarbon that has to be mined through very, very extreme extraction processes. The TransCanada paraded this pipeline around as a conventional crude oil pipeline. They say it's no different than your grandpa's crude oil. In East Texas, loves its grandpa's crude oil. I'm from Texas, I understand that. But this is not crude oil. It will not behave like crude oil when it's released, and we have no way of cleaning it up.
Ramsey Sprague with Tar Sands Blockade in Houston, Texas. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you so much, Dory.
Bullying continues to be a national concern, both on and offline. Health experts say that bullying can lead to depression, anxiety, and low self-esteem. It can also contribute to absence in schools, poor grades, and even suicide. In response to these problems, a group of students in Colorado worked with their school district to find ways to protect more students from the effects of bullying. From Boulder, Angelica Kalika has the story.
The Boulder Valley School District already has a policy against discrimination on the basis of race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, age, disability, or religion. but a group of concerned students noticed it left out an important category, physical appearance. Briggs Gamblin is the director of communications and legislative policy for the district.
It was decided that it made the most sense to incorporate body image, or what ultimately came to be called physical characteristics, in the district's non-discrimination ordinance, which was due for significant revision based upon changes in federal and state law and other areas. They can report it to any staff member in the building, but especially school administration, and the person who engaged in that activity will be dealt with on a case-by-case basis.
The changes were driven by a group of students who were working to promote positive body image in local schools. It was the kids themselves that took action to demand that students not be bullied for their physical appearance and presented this policy to their Board of Education.
In school, I've dealt with bullying based on my religion, my ethnicity.
That's Neil Sandu, one of the students behind the new policy.
But the bullying that hurt the most was based on weight or appearance, just because my whole life I've been told that the bullying based on religion or skin color has been wrong, because it's been in our anti-discrimination policies. The fact that the school board didn't count bullying based on weight as unjust, I kind of didn't know whether that was okay for students to treat me like that or others around me like that.
According to the youth advocacy group PACER, one in every three students in the U.S. is bullied. But that statistic does not reflect those that don't report and those that are chronically bullied. Student Sydney Brooks says that after she was bullied, she realized the problem didn't rest with how she looked, but how her peers treated each other.
I think I was tired of trying to change myself and trying to change my body and who I was, and I wanted to try to change our culture now.
It's not just the students in Boulder who are taking a stand against bullying. Julie Herzog is the director of the PACER National Bullying Prevention Center, and she says there is a national trend of students going to their local and state governments to make sure change happens.
If kids get involved with this issue and if kids start looking out for each other, they have a really significant impact on the outcome of a bullying situation and a positive impact. There's a statistic that almost 60% of situations will end when there's bystander intervention.
It's not always easy to get school officials to listen. Lori James Hawkins says she struggled to get the school district to pay attention to her concerns about the bullying of her daughter. She hopes other parents will have a different experience with the new anti-bullying policy.
The response from the teachers and the school administration tended to be, kids are mean, they'll grow out of it, it's, don't worry about it. And then at the same time, I could see how that was affecting her, sort of negative way she was viewing her body. And it was awful as a parent to not have the support of the school.
Boulder Valley is the first school district in Colorado to adopt an anti-bullying policy based on physical appearance. School districts in Michigan, North Carolina, Oregon, Texas, Washington, Massachusetts, Wisconsin, and California have already adopted a bullying based on physical characteristics clause in their non-discrimination policies. Angelica Kalika, FSRN, Boulder, Colorado.
A Dutch member of parliament appeared in court today to defend himself against the accusation of digital trespassing. He gained access to personal medical records, but says he did that to prove that the website had a security leak. He is now part of a discussion in the Netherlands about ethical hackers, those who go online in order to expose security lapses. FSRN's Peter Teffer reports.
The Dutch society is one of the most connected in the world. With almost 93% of the population having online access, it has the most internet users in the European Union. That also means that a lot of Dutch personal data is online. The Dutch government last year installed the National Cybersecurity Center to help make sure citizens' information is well protected. Another group that tries to improve online security is operating on the edges of what is legal. They were part of a recent panel discussion at a cybersecurity conference in The Hague, organized by the National Cybersecurity Center. They are what's called ethical hackers, computer-savvy people who find testing security systems an interesting puzzle, says software developer Floor Terra.
For me, hacker is pretty neutral. You can be a white hat or a black hat, and white hats are more the ethical hackers, and the black hats are basically criminals. they abuse security problems. Whitehat hackers are mostly motivated out of curiosity, and then when you find such a problem in someone else's system, you try to get it resolved because people can be hurt by that.
However, there are many companies and organizations that are not aware of the existence of benevolent hackers. Recently, several people who saw themselves as ethical hackers have been sued by the very companies they warned about a security leak. Hank Kroll is an MP who discovered that personal files were easily accessible on a medical research center's website. He contacted the center responsible for the website, but also contacted the press. The center filed a complaint against Kroll. Michel van Eyten, who is a researcher at the Delft University of Technology, is careful to call MP Hank Kroll an ethical hacker, because that is exactly what the judge needs to decide, based on the process of the disclosure.
It's clear that he didn't do this with a criminal motive. He reported the problem to the company, although from what I understand, he didn't try very hard. He just made one phone call. But he never publicly shared the data. He only showed that they were not properly secured.
The Dutch government now publicly acknowledges that not all hackers are criminal. In January, the National Cybersecurity Center published a guideline on ethical hacking, which it calls responsible disclosure. At the conference in The Hague, Minister for Security and Justice Ivo Opstelten referred to this guideline.
Outsider expertise can help safeguard the digital security of public and private parties, and that is very important in our society. So I will be actively promoting responsible disclosure and encouraging its use within central government.
The director of the cybersecurity department at Opstelten's ministry is Will van Gemert. He is responsible for the contents of the new non-binding guideline. He hopes that many companies adopt it, and that hackers who want to report a security weakness will no longer fear repercussions.
What we are aiming at is giving, at one hand, companies the possibility to be transparent about their policy, and we give some guidelines in this, how they should act. On the other hand, we make also clear to hackers or reporters what they can do and cannot do, the do's and don'ts in this field. And what we are aiming at is that in the future, a lot of companies and also reporters will act along those lines.
The government is not pursuing a change of the law, which means that ethical hackers can still be prosecuted. Digital trespassing will stay a legal offense. That's because it's not always clear whether a hacker has acted responsibly or not. In such cases, a judge will have to decide that. However, some in the hacker community find the guideline too non-committal. Some Dutch companies already have their own guidelines, like Marktplaats, an ad website similar to the American service Craigslist. Robin Schuil is one of the initiators of Marktplaats' guideline. He says his company welcomes the ethical hacker community's input, but only if they abide by the company's rules.
And for us, the most important criteria there, again, is private information from others. If you access that, we need to inform those others, and so we will have to file a report against you. If you don't, then we consider you an ethical hacker that is working with us to help us, and we might offer you a job.
That last remark was not a joke. Last year, a Dutch student helped Marktplaats solve a security leak and was rewarded with an internship there. However, not everyone thinks that reporting security leaks to the company is always the most responsible thing to do.
For example, imagine that you found a vulnerability in a car, let's say in an airbag of a car. I've actually had this debate with a so-called ethical hacker, and you know, what they said is you disclose it to the car manufacturer. And I said, no, you tell the world immediately.
That's American hacker Jacob Applebaum. He argues it's more important to share your findings with the general public.
Companies have a lot of resources to protect their image, to lie to people, to, for example, fix the issue but maybe not share the fix freely with everyone. And it's only when the press is involved, it's only when the governments of the world see how serious the issue is and they can't deny it, then companies really go above and beyond almost always.
Whether the Dutch judiciary agrees with Applebaum might be revealed in a court case against Henk Krol, the Dutch politician that discovered the leak in the medical website. His court case is due to start on February 1st. Peter Teffer, FSRN, The Hague.
Before we go, a correction. In FSRN's coverage Wednesday of a Senate hearing on gun control, we incorrectly stated that former Congressmember Gabrielle Giffords was shot with an assault rifle. Giffords was in fact shot with a Glock semi-automatic handgun, which her husband Mark Kelly testified had a 30-round ammunition magazine. FSRN regrets the error. And that's the program for today. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.